Just seeing here, we got Free Ray on the line.
Yep, that's me.
Hey, what's going on there, brother? How's it been going?
Oh, man, the weather's been good, working hard.
I hear that. I hear that, man. We spoke briefly about what you have been doing here since last time we spoke through podcasts. Is, you had been, putting in work, signing a couple fighters, from a few months ago. But, after that, you kind of like added a few more people on. So, I just wanted to catch up on that to see how that was going, among other things. So, how's it been going on the boxing front?
Well, you know what? I think it's coming along well. You know, it's a matter of having to educate the fighters. A lot of times these fighters, they used to getting money up front. And what they don't understand is that when you take the money up front, it hurts you in the end. And just trying to get them educated on that and how that they can actually generate money outside the ring. You know, a lot of them really don't understand that, you know, the mentality that they have to have. And, I mean, it's almost like being a daddy all over again, you know, because some of these guys are so green to how to actually make money, even though that's what they after. They after money, but they think that the only way you can get money is in a boxing ring. Getting
right.
Hit and or hitting somebody. And I'm saying no, that once you do your work, you should be able to get money other ways than just the ring. And nobody's really teaching these guys that. And I think that it's important that they learn that there's actually other places that you can make money.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, when you talk about the business of boxing, and, I kind of like compare it a little bit to, the NFL. And usually when people talk about the NFL, they say that the NFL means not for long. Well, in pro boxing, it's not that long either. And it's something where you could, have a very short career, whether it's like, 1 or 2 years, and you could be pretty much out the game. And then after that, if you don't have any other options, then you pretty much be, behind the eight ball, so to speak. So, creating programs for these pro boxers to have something alongside being a professional boxer would, give them those opportunities to make money outside of being a boxer, because once you're in the boxing game, yeah, you're out there, fighting and things like that. But after that's all said and done, some of that gets taken away from you because the boxer's not putting in all the work in order for them to set up the fight, get them in a venue, and handle other things that the fighter doesn't have to worry about when it comes to the fight itself. So they have
which
to have something else.
Should be worried about. They should be focusing on every aspect of the business because, like with anything else, the actual people who actually do the work are usually the lowest paid in that arena. You know, just like an artist, they don't make nowhere near the money a record label's making.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of these artists figured out how to do it on their own and started a new trend. You know, guys like Master P and Suge Knight, they taught the record business how to own your own masters and, how to do things on your own.
Right.
And not sit around and wait for Uncle Universal to come in and do everything for you.
Yep, exactly. And it's like, a lot of these young cats don't, understand that part of the business and that, they need something, on the side there for them to, keep afloat. So I just, don't understand, why they don't get it at this particular point nowadays. You did bring up those examples there with, Master P or Suge Knight or someone in the music business that, came up independently. Because they didn't want to have the, you know, the record companies to control the masters and everything like that. They want to full control over it. So that's the whole thing about, you know, ownership and how, you know, people have to understand how important it is to own everything that you could possibly own there instead of, you know, having other people handle it there in that instance. So
absolutely, absolutely. But it's so easy to get relaxed, you know, with somebody else, you know, coming in and just cutting you a check that, mm-hmm. that, you know, you can get used to that. You know, they make it real easy for you. You don't have to think, you know, all you have to do is, when you get ready to go buy a car, you call daddy and daddy cuts you a check and you go get the car and not knowing how much that car really cost you, you know, you could have went and bought that car for yourself and, you know, save yourself a lot of money, a few hundred thousand dollars. But a lot of times, you know, with our kids, you know, coming from these ghettos and not really having a father around the house and, you know, mother never did business, you know, don't have anybody in the family that ever did any business. Because I was a victim of that, you know, when I sold drugs, if I would have had somebody, you know, my family would have said, hey, Rick, why don't you open up a McDonald's and I'll go to school and learn how to run it. You know, this is how much it costs. This is what we're going to get back. But so often, you know, in our community, we just don't get that, you know. The only people we get in our community, you know, they got their hand out. You know, buy me a car. Give me $1,000. You know, nobody is really there to look out for the artist's best interest, is what I'm trying to say. I think.
It's like you know, a lot of people want stuff now instead of, you know, seeing the you know, big picture of being, you know, part of a project or, you know, being in something where you know that you're there for the long run, but you also got to have alternatives out there, you know. So it's not like you could just be with one thing and just think that that's going to guarantee you everything. It doesn't necessarily, you know, work that way. So, you know, with a lot of the, you know, young people out now, whether it's, you know, in boxing or, you know, music or whatever, like, that can't be their singular project, you know, because you could have other opportunities where you could make money where it doesn't have to be directly from boxing, but at least boxing could be a start to getting other things. Like, for example, I think it's like the Charlo brothers, I think, have like a car dealership or some sort, something like that. You know, where they have, you know, other projects that they're working on, not just with their, you know, boxing success, but they also have success in other business ventures. So if they're able to do that, then, you know, by the time that they're done, even though they're like fairly young themselves, but by the time that they're done with boxing, they still have something where they could still, you know, make a good amount of money and still own it. So, you know, they still get, you know, something off of that without having to, you know, work as hard for it.
And boxing will help a car dealership, you know, because people will come and buy from you because you're successful. You know, while you're successful, you got to take advantage of that, you know, to the fullest, you know, because once you start losing or you lose a couple fights, nobody want to have nothing to do with you. You know, they don't want to come see you no more. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want pictures with you no more because everybody want to be with the winner. You know, so once you start losing, you definitely increase your chance of not being successful in other businesses.
Yeah, symbolism is a big factor in that, you know, with, you know, success. And, you know, the more success you have in one avenue, you know, the more that you'll have in other avenues. I mean, you pretty much see, like, how commercials are out there for, you know, a lot of the athletes, and most of those athletes, you know, either are like, you know, champions among the best in that game, or, you know, most valuable players or something like that, but you don't necessarily see, you know, those that are, you know, on the downturn of their careers or, you know, someone that's like a third string, you know, in football, or somebody that's like the 12th man in basketball or something like that. They don't really get those type of commercials out there. You know, you always see like the number one and number two guy on the team. So as long as you have that particular position, you got to make the most out of it, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And what you're saying there is totally correct. I was telling somebody, giving them some tips on how they could increase their sponsorship. And they said they want to do it after boxing. I was like, well, nobody's going to want to deal with you after boxing. While you're the champ, while you got them belts, you got to work them belts. You know, you got to let them belts take you to places that you couldn't go without them belts. And and what I always try to do is I try to get the guys to do other businesses that would be related to what they're doing now, you know, where you can kind of fit them in, you know. For instance, you know, with a boxer, try to have them doing some type of a workout commercial or something of that nature, you know, where still related to what they're doing, where they're not totally taken away from their main job, their day job.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
But it's still tough to get guys to think outside the box. You know, they're so locked in. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like that with us as a people. You know, we've been through so much since we've been in this country, you know, with slavery, with police brutality, social racism, you know, where you go into somewhere and you know you qualified, but they get a job to somebody who's less qualified only because of the skin of their color. And that stuff starts to take a toll on you to where you get to a position where you just don't think that you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that you should be able to do it. And we have to break that as a people.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, you know, goes into the whole thing with, you know, like you were talking about with the belts. Like, within the business of boxing, like, when someone holds a title, whether, you know, it's world title or regional title or anything like that, like, those fighters have to pay to actually keep those titles. So they have to pay a percentage off their purse to, you know, keep their title after they win it or after they retain it. So there's got to be one way where they could make that money back. So why not take advantage of it, you know, through, like the, you said, with a sponsorship deal or anything with, like, marketing, to where they get that money back. Because, you know, they could spend, like, in essence of about, like, you know, $30,000 to, you know, up to maybe $100,000 or, you know, in some cases, millions to keep a belt, you know. And
Wow. They
don't do with anything in reference to, you know, making that money back. Like, I mean, you know, an example is, like, with Miguel Cotto. He had to, you know, spend in excess of $1.1 million in order to keep a world title. And he was like, you know what? Nah, I'm not gonna do that. But that's how much it could, you know, possibly get up to in order for some of these fighters to keep those belts. So it's you know, crazy in that instance. Another example is,
it seems like to me that the belt people should be paying the fighters.
But the way that the game is,
because they're the ones that everybody come to see. They don't come to see the belt. I mean, well, I guess they do once you're a world champ, you know, status up. But I believe that the fighters should be more important than the belt, you know. And part of that's because that they're not making stars. You know, they really just letting guys fight and whatever their reputation is in the ring. then that's it. They don't take any time and any effort into making these guys the kind of stars that they could be, or that I think they could be, you know. And I could be, you know, I never did it, so I could be thinking wrong. But my goal is to, I want to create somebody that is a star, is a star, not only in the ring, but as well as outside the ring. I think that that's where that's one of the things that boxing is missing right now. You know, most of the fighters, nobody knows them, you know, outside of boxing fanatics, you know, boxing fans.
Right.
But I believe that if you're a great fighter, you're a world champ, that everybody should know who you are. They should be able to recognize you when they see you.
Right, exactly. And, you know, with the thing with the sport of boxing, there's only, like, you know, a few fighters out there that are, you know, recognizable, you know, outside of the boxing ring. And the thing about it is like, boxing, you could basically, you know, see those guys, whether they're, you know, doing their thing or they're not. It's not like something like, you know, like football, where you only recognize, like, a few people because they do have those commercials. But outside of that, all you recognize is either the helmet, the jersey, you know, the number on the jersey,
the number,
or the name on it, you know? And that's pretty
much
it.
But with boxers, it's worse than that. They don't even recognize the number of the boxers. You know, the boxers
right,
don't even
yeah.
have jerseys as famous. They don't have famous
right.
jerseys. They don't have famous sweatshirts.
Nope.
They don't have any
no,
tennis
no
shoes.
No marketing materials. You know, nothing like that. You know, you might see, like, some fighters have some shirts out or something like that. But other than that, you really don't see that much of that going on. So it's like, how else will, you know, people that are walking out in the street recognize you if you don't really, you know, have that? So it's kind of a tough situation for a lot of those fighters in that instance where, you know, they don't necessarily market themselves outside of the boxing ring. And you have those opportunities there through social media, you know, through other means that you could get yourself visible. But if you're not doing what it takes for people to notice you, how are you going to expect to get the money that you want to get out of the sport or outside of the sport?
Right. I totally agree. And that's what I plan on bringing to the sport. Guys who make more money outside of the ring than they make inside the ring. That's going to be one of my goals, is to see if I can generate more money out the ring than they can generate in the ring.
Yeah, I feel you. Now, I know that you know, are not just necessarily in the boxing business, but you also, like, have other programs going on as well. You know, I think that you were kind of, like, speaking on it a little bit on your Instagram page. So could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, after I saw what happened with George, one of my homies had called me who had just did 35 years in prison, and he was almost in tears. And he was talking about going to get him an AK. He was that upset, and almost as if he was ready to put it all on the line, you know. And what I told him is that he was needed out here, and we could basically – we need him out here. You know, he has the not only the strength but also the smarts to help a lot of people out. And me and him started talking, and we figured out is that one of the things that we needed as a community is we need an agenda. We don't know, as a people, we don't know what we're going to do. You know, we don't know what our plan is. We don't know where we're trying to go. You know, one guy's trying to make the NFL, one trying to make the NBA, another one's trying to do it in boxing, one's trying to do it in acting, but none of us are working together coherently as a people. And we felt that that we needed to put that together, so we started a little talk that we have on Zoom every was Saturday, but now it's going to be every Sunday, where we'll be bringing some of the top black business people in the world, and they'll be telling us how they did it and giving us ideas and tips about how we can do it as well.
Yeah, that's what's up. I mean, you know, I've taken some time to, you know, try to promote businesses that are out there, you know, in the, the U.S. I've had, you know, instances where, you know, I'd spend like a whole month promoting, you know, black businesses around the country, you know, so to speak. And, you know, I've kind of like read a couple of books in reference to, you know, how to build, you know, how to build businesses, and also, you know, in reference to networking and things like that. You know, kind of like, you know, read stuff from, you know, Dr. Claude Anderson in reference to that, and also, you know, a few other people. And, you know, having that type of, you know, mentality to, you know, one, promote businesses, but also support those businesses is something that we need to do as a people in order to, you know, have ourselves be, you know, stronger as a group of people.
Right, I agree. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
We definitely do.
So, like, you know, in some instances, you know, I kind of, like, promoted, you know, businesses that, you know, dealt with, like, you know, clothing or, you know, something that we, like, because the thing about it is, like, it seems like we've been consuming for a long time, like consumers, but we never, you know, are producers. But we never, like, really own most of the stuff that, you know, we buy as consumers. So I try to, like, promote stuff for, like, you know, those that, you know, where it comes with clothing, shoes, or, you know, anything with hair care or, you know, something like that. And then build from there, because we spend a lot of that money towards that, but pretty much 99.9% of that money doesn't go back to us. Because
right.
We don't go to those businesses that, you know, where we have, you know, those that produce clothes, shoes, and, you know, does hair care. But we don't go to those businesses. So I'm trying to just promote the ones that we do have so that, you know, our people could go to those businesses instead.
Right. Well, that's the same thing that I try to do is promote black businesses. You know, I go around the juvenile halls and I talk to kids. I go to high schools because one of the things that I found out is that most of our parents don't have the business savvy that we really need. And the ones who do have it, most of them move out of the community. You know, they don't stay in the community to share the wisdom that they've learned. They usually get their money and leave the community. And I felt that it was important that we start to share the wisdom, you know, with the community. And that's one of the things that I did. You know, I made quite a bit of money when I was in the drug business. And people can say, you know, well, it was drugs, so it was no big deal. But, you know, I took $125 and I was able to turn that into making as much as $3 million a day sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was doing it, I didn't think it was a big deal. But after I was in prison and I started to study business, to do any business where you can take $125 and turn it into $3 million a day sometimes is a big deal. And then when you look at the fact that I was uneducated, my mom was on welfare, didn't know my father, that even increases it even more. You know, when I look at life, you know, I say I'm probably going to be the first person ever to be a billionaire that was also on welfare at one time.
Mm.
I don't know of anybody else that did that. But, you know, I'm also in the cannabis industry right now. I want a cannabis license here in L.A. That's coming along very well. I have my own brand of marijuana products. I have my own clothing line. That very small, though, you know. Right now, just T-shirts, sweatshirts. But my goal is to eventually add all the products that that we use as black people.
Now, the thing with the, you know, the marijuana business, now you say that you have something there where you would have like a product. Is that able to like say, well, you know, over there in California, like at the very least, like you could have it in stores in California, correct?
Correct.
Now,
only California.
Yeah, only California.
Every state has their own rules. So,
yeah, as I know that, like you know, over in the D.C. area, they do have their, you know, good amount of stores in the D.C. area too. But I'm not sure like how they you know, do things as far as like getting products over there. You know, like if you're,
yeah, you have to manufacture
like
it. You have
stuff
to,
like that.
You have to manufacture it in state.
So, yeah, that's the thing about it is, like, if you know, had, like, a product that could be manufactured in another state, and that could be, you know, a way to, you know, have, like, another, you know, like, another a location where that product could be sold, you know. But, you, like you said, the way that the rules are right now currently is not like you could just, you know, have something in one spot and then be able to easily do it, you know, someplace else. It, you know, that has, like, you know, so many obstacles there. But I think, you know, that's kind of, you know, one thing that is a setback is that you could have, you know, your ways to, like, do a business there in one state, but if you're not able to expand it to other states where you could, you know, even be more successful, that kind of, like, limits you as far as, like,
it does.
You know.
It does. Well,
you know,
not only with that, but, you know, right now it's not federally legal, so
yeah,
you can't cross state lines. But not only that, but we don't have any banking. You know, you're not supposed to put marijuana money inside of a bank, which makes it a tough business as well. You know, you can't
yeah.
take credit cards. So those are some of the hurdles that we're dealing with now, which we hope, once Biden and Kamala Harris win, that they'll make it federally legal, you know, for marijuana, because the country's gonna need something to bail it out of this financial crisis that we're gonna find ourselves in. You know, I believe with them giving out all this pandemic money is gonna send a dollar plumbing fee. You know, the dollar's going to lose tremendous value. And I hate to see our people out here getting that money just blowing it. I mean, they're literally just throwing the money away. And I hate to see that.
I mean, yeah, it seems like the dollar and the value of the dollar is, you know, kind of, you know, in limbo right now. And I'm not sure, you know, how it is over on that side, but, you know, over here, you can't really, you know, use, you know, dollars that much, you know, from a retail standpoint or, you know, in a transaction standpoint. I know that you can't use change in many places.
Yeah.
Like, if you have change, you can't use that to, you know, pay for stuff in some places. So it's kind of like an option that's, you know, out the window out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably only going to get worse. The more they print up the dollars, you know, the worse it's going to get. And I hear they're going to print up another $2 trillion for stimulus.
For the stimulus
plan. Yeah, to try to prop up the economy.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't even know what happened to the stimulus from the first part that was given to the states. Because, I mean, like, the states got billions of dollars, but I don't even know where that went. So, it's a crazy situation there, man. I wanted to, like, kind of, like, touch on, you know, another thing here with your history, because the last time we, like, spoke at length, you were talking about, you know, being a tennis player and how that kind of, like, you know, built up, like, your thinking skills or, like, your, you know, on-the-fly thinking skills. So I wanted to, like, get back into that and, like, you know, how that, you know, kind of, like, built your life at that particular point up to now. Like, how is it? Because you say, like, you still play tennis off and on, right?
Yeah, with my babies. I got two kids that I teach. So I do play with them.
Yeah, so, like, how did that sport, like, you know, affect you over the course of your life?
Well, you know, tennis is a thinking man's game. I mean, tennis is just a great sport all the way around. It's one of the best cardios. I've read in magazines where they say that it's the best cardio that a person could get because, you know, you're using your whole body. You're running, you're jumping, you're twisting, you're turning. You're getting a complete workout in. But not only that, I also found out is that it helps you with your thinking because you have to think on the move. You know, you're thinking while you're running. You're calculating. And tennis helps with all that. So it's just a great game for kids to be a part of. And you know, I was fortunate enough that that I got introduced to it at an early age.
Yeah, I feel you. Now, you know, with that, like you said, you were able to, you know, kind of like build, you know, thinking skills. It's almost like, you know, playing chess out there, but, you know, it's like a physical form of chess, so to speak. You got to be able to calculate the right move before, you know, the ball gets to you. So once that ball does approach you, then you could just be able to counter the move that your opponent gave to you, you know. So I feel like, you know, tennis is almost, you know, a way of, like, playing chess out there, so to speak.
Absolutely, absolutely, because you have to anticipate, you know, you're anticipating. You're also setting things up for the future, just like in life, like you should be setting things up right now for your future. What's to come, and you have to do the same thing in tennis. So it's amazing how similar tennis is to life.
Yep, true that. Now, you also, you know, have, like, other you know, projects going on. I think, like, wasn't there, like, something in the works for, like, a movie or a documentary of some sort?
Yeah, we just finished with the script for my motion picture. So right now the investors are going over it, trying to give it the final approval. Once that happens, we'll be out casting.
So that thing there with that, so you've been in the works for that for, like, the past couple of months?
Years.
Mm.
I've been working on this movie maybe 22, 23 years.
Ooh. Wow. So
yeah,
I mean,
was working on it with the late George Jackson. Me and George Jackson was working on it. There's been a couple of people that were working on it with me that are no longer here today. So I've been working on this a long time. But I refuse to allow somebody to come in, and just because they had the money to do it,
to take my story and do it the way they want to, I have to be involved.
It goes back to what I said in reference to ownership, man. Like, you know, you have to have the control over it, or else, you know, someone else will, you know, kind of like feel like, oh, you should do this, or you should do this, or this should be part of the story, or you should take this part out. You don't want to have, like, someone, you know, over you talking about your own story. That doesn't make, you know, that wouldn't make much sense, though. So long as you're able to build it from scratch and everything, then, you know, you won't have anyone else have to say anything about it.
Yeah, and then even with that, you still have to be careful. You know, we did my documentary, independent, and it still got stolen from me. So even with doing that, doing everything the right way, you know, you're still fighting an uphill battle. That systematic racism is a mother.
And
if you don't play by their rules, you know, the rules that they want you to play by. And, you know, my mom always said I was hard-headed. You know, I don't really like playing by nobody else's rules. I like to implement rules myself. And then change the ones that I don't like. And if the rule I don't like, I'm gonna try to change it.
Yep. True that. Now, just seeing here, I kinda like didn't hear much of what you were saying in the last part. I don't know if like something was going on with your phone or whatnot.
I don't even know what part.
Yeah, kind of sounds like your voice is kind of low there a little bit.
What was that I was just talking about?
Yeah, that last part. I wasn't able to hear that.
Oh, I was saying systematic racism is real.
Oh yeah. And you know that's like a big obstacle that we've been dealing with for many, many years, and it's still present right now. So it's kind of like something that we got to be able to overcome and fight here. So, the thing there with your project, like you said, about 22 or 23 years working on it. But, you say it's soon to be in the it's going to be starting the casting stage, right?
Yeah, casting is next. Once we get approval from the investors, then we'll go to the casting stage. But, everything that works on it takes time.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to also understand is that, this ain't instant potatoes. You can't stir it up, add hot water and stuff. Sometimes you gotta, let that thing simmer a little bit. Let it get right. Let it heat up.
And that
goes for everything. That goes for boxing too,
Mm-hmm.
I hear guys talking about that they locked him out the game. I can't get a fight. I said, you might not be able to fight the person you want to, but fight the person you can. Fight who will fight you.
Yep.
Until you whooped everybody. You say, I done whooped everybody but you. Now you're the only one.
Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be able to find a way to get a fight. One way or the other, So it's like you can't, just sit around and say, there's no fights out there for me. But, if there's no fights out there for you, then in many cases, you're not going to make any money. So, like we were saying at the beginning, if you don't have those other projects that are going on for you to make money outside of the ring, then you're not making any money, period. So you got to be able to put yourself in a position to fight somebody. if you don't have anything else that you could, you know, do in order to keep yourself afloat.
Yeah. And by the way, if there's anybody out there that that want to fight and you can't get no fight, you let me know. We got a lot of dates coming up. And we're going to be looking for good fighters. So pull me up, Instagram, Freeway Ricky, Facebook, Freeway Rick Ross. Oh, and my website is freewayrickyross.com. So you can hit me up at all three of them spots.
Yeah, so, freewayrickyross.com. People will be able to, you know, visit that, and so that will be something there for, you know, like you said, you have, you know, various things going on that we, you know, we're talking about. So that, you know, if there's any fighters there that are, you know, interested, then they could, you know, just go on and be, you know, be, you're involved there with you. Now, I know that, you know, we talked about you potentially being or working with, I think it was, like some other, like, promotional management company in boxing?
MKT Global.
Oh, through MTK Global?
MTK Global, yeah, we've been talking for about 4 months now. And I don't know if you know, but they're trying to make an imprint into the U.S. market. And they've asked me to be a part of their team, which I'm excited about. I think they would be a great fit for me. We just have to sit down and discuss all the particulars.
I feel you. MTK Global, you know, they are involved with, you know, a few, you know, notable fighters over across the pond in the UK. So I think, you know, we had a couple of those fighters there that were, you know, recently in fights. I think, Carl Frampton, you know, was involved with them, and I think also Mick Conlon, maybe. So they're trying to, you know, have you know, more people there come over here in the U.S. and kind of like have some things going on in the U.S. But they do have a good amount of you know, fighters that are there over in, you know, the U.K. or over in Ireland. But like I said, they want to see if they could get something to the point where they're involved in the U.S. and they could add a few, you know, a few people that could be part of that team, you know, part of that management team or promotional team, and you being able to, you know, get fighters here in the U.S. that could, you know, have some action going down here when it comes to the sport of boxing in the U.S. So that would be a opportunity there for you to, you know, have your, you know, your name out there in the boxing game, and for boxers to have their name out there in the boxing game.
Correct. And they just signed, they just signed a kid out of Baltimore. They was talking about on ESPN yesterday. Truck. I don't know Truck's real name. But he's a highly anticipated prospect that's coming up. I think he's like 8-0, 9-0. He's fighting out of Baltimore too.
I may have heard about that name. Lorenzo Simpson. I think it's Lorenzo Simpson.
Yep, that's it. You hit it right on the head.
Yeah,
they announced on ESPN yesterday that he just signed with them.
That was a few days ago that they signed Lorenzo Truck Simpson. So, I think they also have Super Featherweight Champion JoJo Diaz as well. So, So yeah, he has like JoJo Diaz, Lorenzo Simpson, and I think it's Jonathan Lopez, a young fighter out of Puerto Rico, that's signed there with MCK Global. So they're getting those few fighters there, and then you're able to get the ones that you have with you, on to fight within that MCK Global banner. Then there'll be a lot of action that could happen here within the United States.
Yeah, and me and one of my partners, we're working to start doing two fights a month in Mississippi. So we're gonna probably be doing like two fights every single month, and we got a budget right now that'll carry it for 4 years. So won't be no fighters who don't get paid, and all that other stuff that be happening. People be skipping out on people. We have the money to back us for at least 4 years. So our goal is going to be to build fighters up, help fighters, who can fight once a month. You want to fight once a month? Come on, let's go. Well, no, we may not be giving you the kind of money that you'll get on ESPN or Showtime, but we'll keep you busy.
Right, right. And, I think there was like, one person that I'm, involved with that, kind of like frequents that area. So he, once you, get that thing going in Mississippi, he'll, definitely be able to spread the word out there, within Mississippi or within the southern region about, the action that goes down there in reference to that. So that's going to be a good little thing there for, young boxers or, those that are just starting out in the pro game to kind of like their start there in the Mississippi area right there. So that's going to be really good as far as like, that particular project there. Like I said, you have the budget for it. So once they get all the approvals down and everything, then you'll have, like you said, what is that, about two fights a month, right?
Yeah, two fights every month. Well, what we're waiting for now is pretty much the coronavirus to loosen up a little bit. Because we want to do ours with fans in the seats. We don't really want to do it without fans because we don't have TV.
Right. Yeah, if you don't have that type of TV deal, then you would need, a gate in order to, get that money back in there.
Exactly. Which we believe the TV deal is going to come. We believe a TV deal is going to come, but we're going to start without a deal.
Gotcha. That had me thinking, because you working with former world champion Austin Trout, and Trout was in a fight that was with I think it was like Impact Network or something like that.
Yep. I help with that too.
Yeah. So, there could be, instance there where, maybe you could kind of like once that thing is kind of pushed out there for the boxing series to start in Mississippi, that, you could present it out to someone like the Impact Network for them to, like kind of get into that because, they were invested into, the sport of boxing there. As far as like showing fights and things like that.
I think they plan on doing 25 shows once the virus clears up.
Mm-hmm. So
I know the owner.
That's a good amount of fight cards there for them. So
We definitely can get fighters to fight if that's what they want. If you're looking for a $1 million check from me, don't call because I don't have it. But if you're looking for somebody that can help you, that'll be willing to stand in the trenches with you, then I'm your man.
Right.
I'm gonna go to bat with you. you know, I'm going to help you get that $1 million. And just that I'm not the one to get it.
Right. Right. It's not like, you know, you're going to have, you know, that $1 million up front. That's not, you know, basically what this is. This is basically a building program for you to start. And then as long as you follow the path, then you'll be able to, you know, get that opportunity to make that million that you, you know, kind of seek there. You just can't, you know, get into something and then, you know, basically you say, okay, I'm making this $1 million right here, you know, right then and there. It doesn't really work that way, you know. So
right, you ain't want to fight. You ain't want to fight.
Yep. Like you haven't, you know, done anything to, you know, get yourself into a fight, you know, winning a fight, you know, no type of buzz whatsoever, and then you expect to, you know, get a lot of money out of that. Like, it doesn't quite work that way. I've never, you know, seen it done in any form or any fashion in a professional boxing game. So.
No, in no sport.
No sport. Mm-mm. Oh. So, that's the thing about it.
They play LeBron James so much money because they know that he brings the eyeballs. He put butts in the seats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they came on that money. The guys who can't bring people to the arenas, who can't get people to turn the channel, they're sitting on the bench and they ain't getting no money.
Right. Right. You know, the thing there is, like, it's totally different from a LeBron James or, you know, like a James Harden or something like that, compared to someone that's making the NBA league minimum, which is, you know, what about like maybe $250,000, if that, you know. So it's a whole different.
So you go,
you know,
from there from that to 40 million. You go from a guy making 250 to one guy making, you know, 28 million, and you have to figure
mm-hmm.
out why. You know, what's the
yep.
difference?
Exactly.
And there,
you know,
and there's what lies the secret to Floyd
yep.
Mayweather's success. You know, why can Floyd get $300 million and the rest of these guys can't get 10 or 5? Floyd
yeah.
gets better than him. And some of them say Floyd can't whoop him.
Right.
I don't know
they
what the truth
they,
is about that.
Yeah, they say they can't do it, but the thing about it is, it doesn't matter for Floyd if you can beat him or not. You just got to be able to have the wherewithal to say, hey, you know, I'm the best, but I can, you know, do what needs to be done in order for people to pay top money to watch me fight. That's the thing that Floyd Mayweather perfected. Was that he was able to get, you know, people to pay top dollar to watch him fight. And whether it's for, you know, him to win or whether it was if he was going to lose, he still got those eyes to be out there to watch him fight. So he was able to perfect that, you know, and nobody, you know, has ever come close to equaling that right now. And he's, you know, been out in the game for about three years.
Well, right now, because you imagine if Ali was around right now, how much money he would make?
Oof. He would surpass Mayweather, man. He would surpass Mayweather. It's like he would be, you know, he would be like one person that would like have the world stop to see him fight. You know, that's how impactful he was. You know.
But he was a smart dude.
Yeah.
Muhammad was no fool. He may not have known how to pick a manager. But one thing he knew was how to captivate the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it was radio, if it was TV, even right now, every now and then somebody will send me a Muhammad Ali quote. And I'd be like, what the fuck? I never heard you say that before. You know, because it's stuff be so profound. You know, about a week ago, one of my partners sent me a video, and Muhammad was on there, and he was talking to the reporter, who was a white reporter from one of the big news channels. And he said, well, you know, one day I was asking my mama, I said, Mama, why is everything white good and everything black is bad? And so the mama said, baby, no, it ain't like that. He said, yeah, Mama. He said, look at this here, look at this here. The white cat is pretty. The black cat is bad luck.
Yeah.
He said, the black cake is devil food cake.
Yep.
The white cake is angel cake.
White cake is angel food cake, yep.
Yeah, he said, is there any angel? Is there any black angels in heaven?
Yeah, man.
So you know when these dudes learn, man, how to become relevant. Like I haven't heard not one boxer speak out about the situation, you know, with the George Floyd and so forth, and you know, nobody stepped up, you know, to make no moves, you know. So we got to become citizens, you know. You can't just be some guy who wears gloves who's on an island, you know, by yourself, you know, where the only time, you know, you're relevant to people is when you're punching somebody.
Right. Yeah, I thought that, you know, that whole thing with George Floyd would be, an opportunity for, you know, these boxers to speak out. I mean, I only heard about, you know, maybe two fighters, one here in the U.S. and one in the U.K., but, you know, nothing where it was, you know, kind of like a level of, like you said, a Muhammad Ali or someone like a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or a Bill Russell or Jim Brown or something like that, where they didn't just, you know, make statements. They were out there visible, you know, doing protests and that type of thing. You know,
them dudes took the chance on getting beat with sticks and chains. Could you imagine if they had it as easy as we got it right now, where they would be? You know, those guys, man, those guys went through hell back then. Man, they didn't even want them going to white schools. They probably didn't even want them playing against a white school. And if they won, you know what they got. If they won, you know what they got. At the very least, spit on.
Right.
And then when the police got there, they probably clubbed you a couple times.
Yes.
They probably hit you.
Yes,
the police probably say, nigga, you call us on some good white folks? Pop. Right upside the head.
Yeah,
man,
I mean,
brothers done had it hard in this country, man. Look, I was handcuffed when they caught me. They finally trapped me, and I knew I was trapped. You know, I didn't want to die. I ain't never wanted to die. So when I knew I was trapped, I got down on my knees, put my hands on my head. They cuffed me up. Tied my feet up with that little thing, and sit the dog on me.
Oh, goodness.
Is that cold? Hey, don't sit the dog on me when I got my hands. At least give me a fighting chance.
Right.
No. They let me surrender. Get on my knees, put my hand on my head, let them cuff me. And that's when they take the dog on me. When I was totally helpless.
Mm-mm.
Nowhere to run. No way to defend myself. But that's how they treat us in this country. That's how they have treated us in this country. So... When you talk about the greats, you talk about the people who molded me. You know, those were the people who I looked up to. Those are my idols. Those are the guys that I wish I would have paid more attention to. You know, sometimes we pay attention just a little bit, and we should be giving it our undivided attention. You know, it's the difference between attention and undivided attention. You know, some of our fighters, they don't know about that undivided attention. They'll go to a boxing match holding a baby. When I get ready to go to war, I want my baby tucked away. With somebody
right.
that I know got her back. Because I know that when I go to war, I may not come out. But every time you step in that ring, you could die.
Yep.
You could literally die up in that ring. Time that you go in there, you should go in there with the mindset is that this could be the day that I die. And when I sold drugs, I felt like that. Every time I touched drugs, I said, you know what, this could be the day that somebody tried to rob me. This could be the day the police come and get you, take you away forever. So when I did it, I was trying to be clicking on every cylinder. Because I didn't want my downfall to be because I wasn't prepared. See, I did that one time in life with tennis. I would prepare and have some great days and then do what everybody else is doing. Just do exactly what you see everybody else doing. See, nobody had ever told me that if you do the same thing that they do, you're going to get the same thing that they got. In order to have something different, you have to do something different.
Exactly.
So, that is.
You said a lot right there, man. As far as like, you know, what you went through, and you know who you were idolizing back then, and now how you know those symbols, you know how they were able to stand out back then, but you don't really have that now. Nobody really stands out.
Most of these dudes are so scared. Now, see, some of these dudes, when they first meet me, I know how much they love me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know when you love me. I know when you love and respect me. I know that. And when I meet them, they show me so much of that. But then all of a sudden, when I get in their ear and I start prepping them, and then they bosses don't like that. Or they owners.
Mm-hmm.
What they call them, stable?
Stables are promoters, promoters or other managers, basically.
Promoters, what they got, a stable? They call them a stable?
Yes.
I wouldn't want to be labeled as in nobody's stable. I'm sorry. I wouldn't want to be in your stable. I don't give a fuck who you is. Sounds too much like an animal. They put horses in stables.
Right.
They put cows in stables. Come on, man. Who uses that kind of language talking about a man, a champ? They would never say they had Muhammad Ali in their stable. Never would they say that.
Never. They wouldn't say that about Ali or George Foreman or Evander Holyfield or Riddick Bowe or none of those fighters. They wouldn't say that.
They might say, I work with Holyfield. I used to be his manager. I hear him talking about, he's in my stable. And fighters, I'm in this stable.
Like how does that work?
They allow that shit in America? I didn't know they even allowed that kind of shit in America. I would call that pimping. Hey, you know where I'm from, we would have called that pimping. Hey, pimping. You know, hey, pimping. They done disguised pimping and gave it another name.
Yeah, basically that's kind of that's kind of what it is in some ways, man. I just don't understand it, but it kind of like goes to the whole.
Hey, that's what pimps call the hoes. Well, she in my stable.
Yep, that's true. That is true. Like, hey, I got this whole roster here. This my stable. Like,
yep.
What?
You already know. Anybody that really been around the game know that's what they used to say, stable.
Yep. Oh, man. Dang, man, it'd be like, man, I got a whole stable full of hoes. Like, oh, man.
There you go. Ooh. And he's balling.
Yo.
And he's balling. If he got a nice stable of him, he's balling.
Yeah, man.
But that's just some of the stuff I want to change, man. Change the name. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Come on, let's change that name. We ain't gonna use that term no more. It sounds racist to me.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of like how they have the they keep using that term. What is it, like stallion or whatnot?
Yeah.
Like, how are you gonna describe yourself with the word that means a male horse? I don't understand it. It's just crazy to me. But this is, kind of like what goes on sometimes. And, like you said, I mean, you gotta be able to change that mentality. And you gotta, be able to do things like say, hey, this is not how it goes. Like, this is, like, you won't get nowhere like being like this. So I was like,
nah. You're gonna be Uncle Tom all your life.
Stable.
Hey, you're gonna be tap dancing forever.
Yep. That's very true. That is very true, man.
Hamilton Handy and then we learned, man, Master P them showed us the ropes already. Own your shit.
Yeah. Yep.
Own as much as you can. If you can't own all of it, own as much as you can. That's why my movie ain't out. That's why my movie ain't out right now. I told him I don't want to be famous. I want to be rich.
Yep.
And y'all got this shit twisted. I made myself famous. I didn't need y'all for that.
Right, exactly.
So if you want to do something for me, make me rich.
Yep.
If you can't do that, I'll holler. Hmm. Call me when you get your shit together.
Yeah. Ooh.
I work online all day and all night.
Yep, all day, every day,
Every day. It's my favorite pastime. Some people say, man, Rick, you work too much. I say, you call this shit work? I used to sell cocaine so I could do this.
Yeah, I'm like, people know like what actual work is, but if you are doing something that you feel like is like a second nature to you, then it won't feel like work. So that's the thing about it.
What if you feel like it's going to save your whole family?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So.
Or maybe some generations.
Yeah.
See, you got to come up with reasons for yourself. Don't come up with reasons why. It won't. Come up with reasons why it should, why it has to, why it's no retreat.
when I'm tired, I got to run one more mile.
Yep. It's a thing. It's like I'm saying, it's like, what's the difference between a reason and an excuse? You know, it basically is none. So it's like, it seems like a lot of people just want to, you know, find out reasons why you don't instead of reasons why, like you said, like you should, you know?
No, not only you should, you got to.
Yeah.
If I had that life sentence, I was in prison, I had to get it off.
Mm-hmm.
I had to. If I didn't get that off, my 8-year-old or 9-year-old wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was destined for them to be here. Because they got a mission. Hey, I'm going to get ready to get off this line.
Yeah.
I'll be here talking to you all night. Look,
yeah.
I appreciate you having me on, man.
Oh, definitely,
man.
And
more important than that, the goal that you shared with me, I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
I want to let you know that.
Yeah.
I deeply appreciate it. All right.
No doubt, my man.
Hey,
like I said, always great speaking with you.
Nobody else can have me on the phone tonight. All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right, my man. Peace to you. So, there you have it there, man. Freeway Rick Ross, they're on the line, and, you know, just was able to speak with them for a good little, you know, hour 15, you know, boxing, about business, about, you know, life, you know, what he's, you know, been through in his, you know, many decades, man. I mean, he's, you know, been out there for, you know, a good minute out in the game. And now he was able to, you know, do what he did, you know, in the streets, and was there in jail, got out of jail, and was, you know, done very well for himself. And he has, you know, a good amount of things that are coming up right now. We did talk about him, you know, having a thing working with MTK Global in the sport of boxing. You know, MTK Global has their presence over in the UK and in Ireland as well. And also, you know, working on the documentary of his life. So that's going to be, you know, in the works. You know, hopefully, you know, by next year, it'll be, you know, one step closer to being a reality. And he does, you know, have his website, freewayrickyross.com. So you'll be able to find out everything that he's, you know, doing there at freewayrickyross.com. He has, you know, merchandise out there, clothing for you to look at, check out, buy, all of that. So be sure to visit that website, freewayrickyross.com there. So, like I said, very thankful for him to be part of this show, and thank for everyone that was able to listen in live. This will be available you know, through YouTube, and then I'll be able to have this on through iTunes as well. So be sure to check that out on iTunes. And just bringing close to this particular podcast, there, thank for everyone that did listen in live. And so I am the host of the Boxing Source Radio Show, so you'll be able to catch that it is regularly scheduled time, Sundays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time there. So y'all be sure to check that out. And until next time, I will get at y'all later. Peace out.